Welcome to Restoring Home, where we talk about marriage, parenting, and faith. And today we have a special edition for you where we're going to talk about something called temperament. And as a counselor, I learned about temperament several years ago. It's very effective. It is so enlightening, and it just has a lot of good in it to know your temperament or to understand the temperament of your children or your spouse. And so today I'm going to give you just a brief introduction to what temperament is, or at least my understanding is, and training in it is, and sort of help figure out how to apply that to maybe you with your children or to your spouse and one another. So I'm going to give you a very lightweight introduction to temperament. Now, temperament and personality are different things, at least as I'm referring to using them. And personality is learned behavior. Personality is the mask that we put on to survive or succeed. It's what we've learned to do to get through. Temperament can't be changed. Temperament is something we're born with, and we can't not have it. It is always with us. Your temperament is always with you. And so learning to work with it, learning its strengths and how to work with it, learning its weaknesses and how to work with those is very important and helpful to us. And so, again, today I'm going to try to give just a brief introduction to the five temperament types that I'm familiar with, introduce them to you, and then give you some ideas about how they might look in your children or in your spouse, and how to work with them to bring out the best results. And also how I see that temperament types really dovetail or play into the person of Yeshua. And so here we go. The five temperament types that I'm familiar with begin with the melancholy. Melancholies are the creators. They're the inventors. They're the musicians, the artists, the poets, the storytellers. Melancholies are creative. It's because their mind is always at work. Their mind never seems to shut off. It's always thinking about something. It's thinking about something in the past. They've had a conversation. They're thinking later on, even later in the day or the next day, they're rethinking that conversation sometimes. They're tweaking and inventing and improving and changing things in their minds all the time. In fact, sometimes melancholies get tired of all the thinking that's going on in their minds and wish they weren't so creative. They would like to take a break sometimes. But these are the melancholy types. They're also very independent. They like to be alone. They can work alone. They can work with people, but they like their alone time. So they can be with people, but they withdraw to themselves sometimes. They also they are also easily, deeply offended. They don't like to be critiqued, is maybe a better way to put it. They really don't like you telling them where they've made a mistake. And because they're perfectionists, and they tend to have sort of an ear that's listening for criticism. It's sort of attuned or aware if someone is unhappy with them, because they're trying to do very well. They want to do well. And so they're very cautious about getting all the information about a particular thing before they venture into it. Some people think they're procrastinating or they're too timid, but actually they just need more information before they make a big decision or before they invest themselves in something. So they're very thorough, which is good. Melancholies tend to also, like I said, they don't like criticism, and so they can push back against that. They can try to avoid it. They do try to avoid it when possible. If you're a melancholy, then when you're in a room of 10 people and you have done your artwork, and you're holding up your art or your project or whatever it is to all the people in the room, and you go around the room and different people, they all have a chance to say what they think about what you've done, then the first person will say, oh, that's great. Second person is great. Loved it. Wonderful. You go around the room and say the last person says, well, it was okay. Then the melancholy will go home wondering, I wonder what was wrong with my painting. I wonder why the person didn't like it very much. Instead of focusing on the 9 who said it's great, they'll think about the 1 who wasn't, because melancholies don't like to fail, and because they want to do well. They want to do things well. So melancholies are motivated. If you put some key words around the melancholy, here's what they would be. Truth, and loyalty. And words, I think. So truth, loyalty, and words. So those are all important. What you say is what they expect you to do. And if they say they will do something, they will do it. They're rule keepers. They prefer rules, in fact, instead of just ad-libbing everything. Even though they're creative, they still tend to like to know the rules, and they'll stay within those boundaries. So for a melancholic, you want to be honest with them and loyal and faithful to them so that they can trust you. So for kids, if you think you have children who fit in this category, then it will be really important for you to give them truth, to be faithful, to follow through on what you say to them. That they will learn to appreciate you very much for doing that. So be honest and follow through on what you say. Don't threaten idly, but follow through. And give them time. They need time to assimilate, to understand new things, to get all the information. You can give them information so they have enough. And then they can move into unknown areas with confidence. If they've done something before and they're very confident in it, they'll be fine to lead in that. They'll do it without your instruction. But in new things, give them time and give them information to become competent, and then they'll move into it strongly. Otherwise, they'll resist, they'll hold back, they'll procrastinate. So, loyalty, truth, and words, true words, or information. That's the melancholy. The sanguine is the next temperament type. Sanguines are like sunshine on a rainy day. Sanguines are the talkative ones. They walk in the room and the room lights up. They love people, and they can hardly do without people. They have to be with people. You give them things and they get bored quickly, and they move quickly to being with people. For example, a sanguine in the office, if the boss says, "Here's the job, I need you to move widgets from box A to box B, and I need this box done today. The sanguine will begin doing that. "Oh, thanks, boss. Great." And they'll begin moving the widgets from A to B. But if someone in the back says, "Does anyone know how to fix a printer?" the sanguine will pop up and go back there and work on the printer. And then if someone calls, they'll take the phone call. And a friend needs the tire fixed. They've had a puncture out on the highway and they need their tire fixed. And so the sanguine says, "Hey, I'll be there on my lunch break." And they'll leave and go fix the tire, help to rescue the person, come back again. Somebody's in the office and they're saying, "Oh, I had a hard day and it's really been bad." And they start telling their story. The sanguine will listen to the story because they enjoy people. And then at the end of the day, they'll find that, "Oh, we didn't finish moving all the widgets from box A to box B." Sometimes that gets them in trouble, unless they have an understanding boss. So the sanguines are going to be better in positions of sales, for example, or being up at the counter, up front, or in places where they interact with people. They'll thrive in that. Put them in the back room, give them a cubbyhole, a little cubicle to work out of, and they wilt, or they're distracted. So sanguines are characterized by their need for people. They're bright and cheerful. They're often the ones wearing very bright flowered shirts or skirts, and they're also wearing the bright colors. They're just extravagant, and they love attention. So if you have a child that fits in this category, then they give them attention. Let them know you see them. Give them words of affirmation, pats on the back. Give them lots of attention. But also, they need to be taught how to control themselves and balance their time with people and their time with things. They need to be taught how to follow through to completion on things. And you need to give them things to do that involve people or pets or music or something living, and they'll do fine. If you put them in a corner and expect them to have quiet time all alone and entertain themselves, you'll be disappointed. It's going to be really hard for them. So give them things to do that involve interaction with living things. So those are sanguines. And if you don't have other kids around, they will enjoy a pet, even if it's a guppy. Give them something living that they can interact with. These are sanguines. So attention and people are key words for them. The cholerics, these are the leaders, and they're also the bosses and the lords and the masters. Cholerics, unfortunately, don't know how to relate to people on a sensitive scale. Cholerics are the ones, they have leadership qualities, but they see the battlefield, and they look quickly at the battlefield or the situation, and they say, "Okay, that's the hill that we need to take." And they will turn to their generals and say, you go that way and you go this way and those people need to be over here. And they just start barking orders and commands and they give directives. And they don't say, do you mind going to that hill? And what do you think? Should we go here or here? They don't. They're commanders. And they like to take charge and give orders because they have this ability to scan the horizon, just look at the situation and determine what needs to be done. And they can determine it pretty quickly. And they can also strategically know where different people fit. So cholerics tend also to be very much like sanguines in that they are people, but for different reasons. The sanguines like being with people because they like people and they need attention. Cholerics like being with people because they can use the people, because they say, oh, you have this talent and you have that talent and you have that ability and I can use you in my plan to go over that hill. And so clerics tend to be very friendly and very popular and very gregarious, but it's for the purpose of accomplishing a task. So what happens is that as soon as they're friendly to you or to you, and then they discern that, oh, you don't really fit my plan, and they can just walk on past you after that. You're buddy-buddy for a while, but then as soon as you don't fit in their plan or they have a new plan that you're not a part of, they just drop you, and you think, what did I do wrong? What happened there? And what happened was, they're not trying to be rude. They just focused. And the focus is something that is to accomplish a certain goal. Cholerics need to learn to be sensitive to people. So if you have children that are like that, who are commanders and bosses and, you know, trying to accomplish a game task or whatever it is they're trying to do, teach them to be sensitive to people. And to help them, what you give them is you give them options, not ultimatums, because clerics are very stubborn and they are the leaders and the bosses, the masters. And so give them options and let them choose from the options rather than ultimatums. It'll avoid you and the child clashing so often, and you can give them options that are either one of them is really in the direction of what you see as the best outcome. So give them options instead of ultimatums. And then give them appropriate opportunities to lead and to use their skills. Let's see. So the next would be and you need to teach the cleric also that they need to learn to be sensitive to people. So you'll have to help them on that. The next of the five temperament types is the phlegmatic. The phlegmatics are characterized by being easygoing, mild-mannered, pretty kind of low energy. They're the peacemakers. Phlegmatics don't really need to be engaged a lot. They can be alone by themselves, quiet in the corner. They'll take if it's a child, they'll take a toy or a book or just sit by the window and just be happy. You don't need to entertain them. You don't have to keep putting new things in front of them. They're very content to be just at peace on their own. So a lot of times they're the compliant child. They're just, sure, whatever. They're just easygoing. The problem with the phlegmatic can be that they're also very stubborn. And so when they decide they're not doing something, they're just not going to do it. And punishment, a reward, neither of those has any effect. If they're decided they're not going to do something, they won't do it. Or if they've decided they're going to do something, they just do it. And it doesn't matter what the choleric or the sanguine or melancholy or anybody else does to them, they're going to do what they want to do. So they can be very stubborn. So the strength of and what you need to encourage in the phlegmatic is, one, they're the peacemakers. If you were putting a key word beside them, it would be peace or peacemakers. If I were to draw two lines here, parallel lines here, and this is emotion, then they don't like too much excitement for too long, and they don't like things to be somber and sad or tense for very long, and they'll try to move things back to peace. Things are just okay. And then they'll disengage from a relationship. So when things are tense, when things are super sad, they'll engage in a relationship. But as soon as things get back in the zone of peace, they pull away and they go off into their own corner and their own world again. So they're really good at making peace and at bringing things together. In fact, they'll use humor to try and do that. You'll catch them with little jokes, little side remarks, and they'll try to lighten up things instead of getting into the deep, tense emotional things or staying too long in the super exciting things, they just kind of make jokes and try to bring things down to peace. Basically, non-interaction with people where they can just go back to being in their corner and live in their own world again. They need, and so sometimes when they are engaged in tense emotion or extreme emotion, when they're in those for very long, it drains their energy. And they just feel they don't want to contribute anymore. And they'll get very sad. They can weep. They can be just very resistant to doing any more. And so what they need at that point is a break. They need rest. Let them go take a nap. Let them pull away and do nothing for a while. Give them a little space to recover their emotional energy, and then they can engage again in the emotional things of the day. So they need that zone of peace, and they need peace times of peace and quiet in order to restore their energy. So for the phlegmatic, keywords are peace and peacemaker. What they need from you is they need recovery time to recover their energy, and they need you to understand that only when things are emotionally at one extreme or the other will they be very engaged, and after that they'll go to their peace zone and just let them go there, because you're not going to change them otherwise. All right, the last thing, the last type is the supine. And this is one that's not often mentioned, or not always mentioned, in the temperament types. Usually it's those first four, but the Arnos have come up with this fifth one, which is supine. I think it's a good one. I think it's accurate. And this one is characterized by, or I could say the key word for it would be service or help. Supines want to serve. They want to help. They don't want to lead. They want to support the leaders. And they very often do not initiate things. They're a very gentle spirit. They're very quiet. They're pleasers. Their only desire is to serve. And so they need opportunities to do that. The problem with the supine, or the weakness of the supine, is that they don't let people know that they want to serve. They don't speak up. They'll sit quietly in the corner. These are the children that will do anything you ask them to do, and if you don't say anything to them, you never know they're there. They're very quiet. They're not causing any problems. They often get overlooked, though. So because they're getting overlooked, because they're quiet, don't think that they're not thinking. They are. Their minds are running all the time. And if you don't invite them to help, if you don't ask them their opinion, if you don't speak to them and draw them out, they feel hurt deep down. They'll bury it for a while, but this hurt or resentment will build up. And then when they, at a certain point, they snap. They explode with anger. This child that's always compliant and quiet and no problems, and then one day they just reach over and they whack their little brother or sister, or they just suddenly spew out some anger at you. And you think, what happened there? Little Junior is always so compliant. And it's because it builds quietly inside the supine unless it's released. And if it's not released, then it will come out like that. So what you do is you give them the opportunity to say what they're thinking, but you have to invite them. Because supines are servants, they don't want to get you to serve them. They don't want to say, can I help? Can I be a part of this? Or I would like to help if you need me. They don't want to push themselves on you, so they wait for you to invite them. They're the kind of kids that if you're in the classroom and you say, who knows the answer to number five? There's always some child that will be the first one to say, I do. And there are a couple of others who eventually will offer that they might know the answer. But this is the child who knows the answer, but will not raise their hand. However, if you say, oh, Joe, what's the answer to number two? He will tell you the answer because he knows it, but he's supine and he won't offer it. So parents, if you have a child that's the helper, the servant, the gentle, quiet spirit, but doesn't initiate, then you will help them tremendously if you ask them, right, to be, if they would have something to say, if they want to be involved, if they could help you. Invite. Also, you will help them if you will teach them that they need to speak up, because people can't read their minds. Help them understand. If you have something you want to do for someone, tell that person that you want to help. Otherwise, they can't read your mind. So train them by helping them to understand they need to speak up, but also help them by inviting them into things. They usually have an opinion on things. They don't say it, but they usually have it, although they don't expect you to do it. They'll offer it, and if you do it, fine. If you don't, that's fine. But it really helps them if you say, Joe, what is your thought on this? Do you have any? And they'll give their thoughts. You can take them or leave them. They'll be fine, but they're better off if you've invited them. So the supine keyword is service or help, because they want to help. And what you teach them is to offer their thoughts without waiting to be invited. And maybe a way to do that is to say, Joe, if you want to help, don't think that we can read your mind. So what you do is you can help us by telling us what's on your mind. See, I've tied into his helping mentality. So you can help us, or you can help others by telling them what's on your mind. And in that way, it motivates him because he's a helper. So this has been pretty quick, and we've gone over these five types of temperaments, and I want to share with you really quickly how these five types, or what these five, how I see these five types are connected with Yeshua. I think that he contains all of these temperament types. We have been given one or two or a blend of some of these as gifts. If you are a creative type, well, Yeshua is the creator. In him, all things were made that have been made. He's the sanguine. He was out with people all the time, always with the crowds, always meeting people. At the same time, he was the choleric. He was the master. He knew where to go and how to get there and who ought to do what. He was the phlegmatic. He withdrew and had times alone. He was also a peacemaker. In fact, he's the prince of peace. And so that's a phlegmatic trait. He is the servant of all. So he's like the supine, ready to serve, ready to help at all times. So in all of these traits, we see Yeshua. He's also, as a melancholy, he's truth and loyal. He's faithful. He is the Word. As a sanguine, again, he's attentive to people, and he's engaging with people of all types at all times. A leader, a peacemaker, and the servant of all. So this is Yeshua as we know him. And we've been given some of those traits for free. We didn't have to work at them. If you're a sanguine and you're an outgoing person and you enjoy people, you don't have to work at getting to know people. You don't have to work at introducing yourself to new people. You have that natural inclination. You'll have to work at some other things, but you don't have to work hard at that. If you're a melancholic, you're naturally creative. Your mind is always working, and you're a person who will be loyal. You're a person who keeps their word. You're a person of truth. You don't have to work at it. It's a gift to you. And so tell your children, when you identify these traits in them, let them know that this is God's gift, that he put this in you on purpose because he needed you. He needed this in you in the world so that together we represent Yeshua to the world. So the melancholy, the sanguine, the choleric, the phlegmatic and supine, the loyal, the attentive to people, the leaders, the peacemakers, and the servants are all in the body of Christ and all functioning in different ways in order that we might reflect the wholeness of Christ to the whole world. We're all necessary. We're all important. We need to learn to work together and value one another. And so within your home, you have children who have different strengths and abilities. Teach them to value each other's strengths and abilities because God has put them in each of them on purpose. And working together as a family, you can reflect Yeshua to the world in a more whole way. Temperament is a great thing. Learn to work with it. Learn how to strengthen it. Learn how to work together with other temperament types. Let me give you one quick example before we close today. And I'll talk to you about a couple, a married couple, who the husband was an outgoing kind of guy, met people brand new. He was easy to meet strangers and welcome them and begin conversation. He was a sanguine, very lively. In fact, that's why his wife enjoyed meeting him in the beginning, is because he was so fun and so energetic, always the life of the party, and he would talk to her and include her, and it felt good to be included with such a popular guy. So here's the sanguine who is very engaging with people. Sanguines also make decisions pretty quick, and they don't necessarily always think through decisions as thoroughly as would be best, because they are more people-oriented than thing-oriented. So they like people, but they don't always think through things like a budget or the consequences of a long-term commitment into a contract or something like that. So the wife is melancholy. And melancholies are people of truth and loyalty and the word, and they get information and they don't make quick decisions. They take their time and they gather all the data before they make a decision, because they don't want to look bad. They don't want to fail. They don't want to fail to be loyal and keep their word. So they're very meticulous and careful about making commitments. So when these two married at first, she thought he was just jumping at the gun and not even thinking through anything and just making commitments. And yeah, we'll be there on Friday. You bet. We'll see you there. We'll do it. Or why don't you come over next weekend and we'll eat at the house. And he was getting people engaged with them. And she's thinking, wait, we've got a budget for the food for all these people. And how many people are coming? And what time will they be here? And who's allergic to what? And who eats what kind of food? And she's thinking of all the practical details. And he's just saying, hey, y'all come. And so it was creating some tension at home. And so the way they learned to, and also he thought she didn't want anybody over. Well, you're so worried about everything. We just want to have fun. Don't worry about it. It'll work out. And she's thinking, no, it won't work out. We can't do this unless we find out some information. And so he thought she was holding up the party. The fact is they were there to help one another. And so working together, I was able to sit with him and say, here's the way this works. You're great at inviting people. Good. Check with her, because she's going to keep you from having a bunch of people over and we're all sharing a cup of water together. She's going to make your party a great party. You're not the only thing at the party that people want to come and see. So it's great that you're good at inviting people, but talk to your wife, because she'll make the party a great one for your people. And she'll take care of all the meals, and she'll take care of all the decorations and all the logistics and calling everyone to make sure everybody's there on the right time. And to her, I said, you know, if it's left up to you, you would hardly ever have a party, because you would be so uptight about inviting everybody that you might not invite anybody over. He's great about getting people to come. She said, that's right, he is. So let him invite people, or encourage him to invite people, but make sure he works it out with you so all the details are worked through. And together, they made a great team. And that's the way that temperament can help you work together as a family or as a couple. So we could go on for a while here, but we're out of time. I simply wanted to share this with you today to say there's something out there that you can put labels on something that's taking place in your family when you recognize that your children are not all the same. And you have given them some kinds of labels, but there's actually something out there that's more defining and more helpful than just, you know, he's outgoing and she's a bossy one, and this one over here, they do everything I want them to do. You can label that a little bit better, and there's more definition that goes with it, and there are strategies of how to have those kids work together and draw out their strengths with each other and also for the world as adults. It's also helpful, very helpful in marriage. I really encourage temperament information for premarital counseling so that young couples know what they're getting into and how to work with one another before they get married, so when they do, they avoid some of the bumps that they're going to face if they don't. Well, there's a whole lot here, and I clearly can't get to all of it. I hope I haven't left you more confused than informed, but for now, just know that that is out there, and I will be posting in the comments below a little summary of the different temperament types and the information that I've given you, so you can have a printout for that, and you can follow, you can go back through and look at the notes and have it available to maybe help you judge a little bit better what's going on with some of the kids or the relationships in your life. So all in all, these are reflecting parts of Yeshua, and they've been given to us freely as gifts. We should celebrate them, we should lean into them, and we should allow them to come out and be in flavor our family in the world. Okay, so until we meet again next time on Restoring Home, God bless.